My Michelle Live podcast.
My Michelle Live. My Michelle Live. Sports time out. The fans, the field, the faith, the fun. Here's Michelle.
Hey, sports fans. I am Michelle Mendoza. Happy to be hanging out with you today. Glad that we could take on the sports stories of the week. I am here with my fellow sports fans. We don't always root for the same team, but we are playing for the same owner. That's right, because we get to the God story oftentimes on My Michelle Live. How you doing, guys? You ready for it? It's time for sports.
Sports!
Yes, sports! It's time for sports. That's right. You have no idea as you're watching, listening, or reading the trouble I had with these boys before we started. So I think it's going to be a good show today. Absolutely. Let me introduce you to the round table of fellas. If you're looking at us Brady Bunch style, guy over
the first to... Zoom call, a Brady Bunch episode.
That's right. The guy over to my left is who we refer to as Encyclopedia Rich. I mean, he is an encyclopedia of sports. He's a longtime veteran sports broadcaster from the great Northwest, Rich Hallstrom.
Encyclopedia.
I shaved my
Rich.
Head for you, Michelle. You the should be thankful.
You know, and somehow I don't
properly
care.
Properly prepared for the show.
I'm so callous. I don't know what's up with that. We have with us author of this book. It is a spectacular sci-fi book. I'm kind of geeky, so I totally love Breaking Yesterday. He's a sports reporter, coach, and photographer, the one and only Brent R. Baker.
Author, photographer, Brent R. Baker.
Yeah. We have with us off screen for some reason. We're not prepared to share him with the public yet, I guess.
The invisible Wookiee.
He can be found on Twitter at Josh Reports Live. He is our sports authority. And yes, when you do get to see him, you'll know why. We call him the Wookiee of the Year.
Wookiee of the Year, Josh McMillan.
Give us a Wookiee call, Josh. Yeah, there you go.
Is that going to be the new sound effect when the Kraken score a goal this year?
Boom, boom, boom. And then, of course, the one and only coach for the Game of Life. This is his book, Athlete in the Game of Life. We have Matt Peel. What a guy.
What a guy. What a guy.
What a guy. What a guy. Oh, what a bunch of guys we have with us today. There's so very much to talk about. And you know what? We're going to talk about the NFL. There's some interesting stories there. Corona is affecting sports. We'll take that on. I have a story about LeBron James getting dissed again. So we have and women's hockey. There's a big story there. Some coming together, kumbaya of college sports. And of course, we'll talk Major League Baseball. I'll be going to a game tonight. Fellas, what I wanted to take on first is the big story because it's on the international stage. And that's the Paralympics. I mean, we watched the Olympics. That was great. But man, when you see people who have gone through the ringer in life, who have had to deal with disability and still overcome, master, and go for the gold. Man, it's so inspiring. Now, Rich, you've covered the Paralympics for years.
My first experience was in 2004 in Athens, Greece.
Okay.
To give everybody a little background. Now you can ask me what you were going to go ahead and ask me.
Well, thank you very much. We know that we don't always see that you get around most of the time in a wheelchair. So you've had to deal with disability issues. So this is near and dear to you. So I'm just going to sit back, drink my coffee, and let you talk.
Well, let's talk about the Paralympics. P-A-R-A-L.
Olympics.
Olympics.
Y-M-P-I-C-S. Let's just get, let's just get that. Let's just get that spelling out of the way.
This is a sports show, not an academic show. Come on.
Okay.
What do you expect of us?
Now, it is it's important because it's not the Paralympics. It's the Paralympics. Let's give them their due. And NBC Sports Network and NBC are doing a great job. 272 total hours when it is all said and done. Let's start with the U.S. team doing a great job in the pool. Anastasia Pagonis sets a world record in the 400-meter freestyle. She's only 17 years old, her first Paralympics. Then her roommate, Gina Perigliese, sets a 100-meter backstroke record for the first two gold medals in the pool for the United States. You know, we talked a lot about how the United States, along with Katie Ledecky and several other people, dominated the pool. Well, the first two gold medals come out of the pool in Tokyo. And also, we got to take a look at women's wheelchair basketball and men's wheelchair basketball, both undefeated in pool play. The United States in men's and women's basketball, undefeated in pool play. They're both looking to go after a gold medal. And Chuck Aoki had the Sports Illustrated cover several months ago before the Paralympics. He is involved in what's called wheelchair rugby, affectionately known as affectionately known as Murder Ball. But they couldn't sell that name to sponsors, so they changed the name to wheelchair rugby.
I'd sponsor it in a heartbeat. That is
Chuck
awesome.
Chuck Aoki.
Have you ever
one
played?
Of the best. Have
Rich?
I ever played?
Yeah.
No, I want to go home at night. So I stayed away.
Your wife was like, it's not happening, Michelle.
I stayed away from those guys. But that was my number one event that I covered in 2004 in Athens. And the Australians are very good in that sport. So is Great Britain. But the United States is on a gold medal quest with Chuck Aoki, their captain. Like I said, Sports Illustrated cover boy several months ago. The U.S. undefeated in pool play, and they're going on to the semifinals. Lots of good stuff. Like I said, 272 hours by NBC. But I got to throw one thing in here. And this is where equality comes in and where we talk about taking people's accomplishments seriously. Only one of those hours is going to appear live on NBC television.
Wow.
All the rest of those hours, the 271 that are left, are going to appear on NBC Sports Network and the Olympic Channel and online. Now, my question for sports fans would be, would that ever happen for the Olympics? If you value the Olympics and the Paralympics as equals in terms of athletic achievement, that should not be the case. So we got some work to do, folks.
Okay, I want to hear what you guys have to say about this.
Go ahead, Brent.
I say, well, first, it's like if you go to the ESPN site, I don't see, you know, in the quick links, they had the, on the side of the site, they had the Olympics for several weeks earlier. Right now, they do have stuff that you can find on the site if you search for it, but it's like you go to that little quick link thing, it's not there.
You have to go to the Olympic sports tab to get anything.
So it's not something that they stuck out there that's like, oh, I mean, that's going on, I better check it out. You have to actually know that it's going on and go look for it. So that just reinforces what you just said there. I think for me, it just more about the event itself. I mean, I'm one of the first guys to be on USA USA, but when I think, just wrap your mind around this. that there is a Paralympic refugee team.
There's great six, point, Brent.
Six people that, I mean, there's one guy I was reading about, he was in the paracanoe. He was in a Syrian refugee camp. He escaped that, went to several countries, made it to Germany, had a job installing solar panels, fell off a roof, and was paralyzed from the waist down. Didn't even tell his family that he'd been paralyzed. They were back home. And so he was like training, didn't even tell them. And then he found out that his brother had been killed. And basically his coach forced him to continue rather than giving up. And that was the point when he told his parents, hey, look, I had this accident, got paralyzed. So you got stories like that that just take it to a whole different level, and especially with, you know, what we're looking at coming out of coming out of Afghanistan this last couple of weeks. There'll be a lot more of people with these horrific stories. But I just, you know, we talk about all the things going on with mental illness in sports and what really that is. These people are just like, if you want to put somebody on a pedestal for mental toughness and what it takes to overcome
horrific
things that we can't even imagine. I mean, it makes me teary sitting here, just even thinking about these, you know, several swimmers, a thrower. It's just amazing to me.
Well guys, Michelle, I'm going to ask just a moment, please, Rich.
No problem.
I have a little bit of a technical difficulty with our video, so talk amongst yourself. You might not see me for a moment. I'm going to fix that and make sure everything's working. Go ahead, Rich.
What I was going to say, Michelle, is this really challenges your view about is everyone
well, I'm sorry about that, guys. We just had a little bit of a difficulty. We'll catch back up with the guys, and then you can see everything that's going on. I bet Rich is still talking. What do you think? Let's see. We'll check it out. There we go.
Everything that Martin Luther King talked about with the Bible and got from a Christian worldview, do you think of everyone like that? Or do you only think of certain people like that? That make it convenient for you to be in friendship with them or be in relationship with them or be their biggest advocate. Because I think what Brent talked about with the refugee team, we also have to add the fact that in solidarity, the International Paralympic Committee flew the flag of Afghanistan in the opening ceremonies. That's the kind of messages we need. This shows the power that God has on people's lives to help people overcome. Mm-hmm. Now, not all those athletes know Christ, but that's what we should be praying for, because think of all the wonderful testimonies that could come out of something like the Paralympics.
Well, it really does speak to a God story that I think anyone can relate to, and that's the fact that there is a deeper story. There's something deeper to reach to. And if that deeper thing isn't welcoming to people, if that deeper thing isn't life-changing, if that deeper thing brings hate, then you might want to reevaluate what that deeper thing that you're looking at is. We'll talk more about that in some of the other sports stories that are going on. I did want to go to the NFL. There's, here we are deep into preseason. Preseason, guys, and I'd like at least someone to address this. Preseason is not showing you a preview of what the year is going to be. You know, we're into week three. We're going to start seeing some of our starters play in a lot of the teams, but it isn't necessarily a preview of how good your team is going to be. And it may have been Brent last week that addressed this. People expect it because you're paying a premium to go and see your team in the preseason, and yet you're not seeing your team. So, Matt, what do you think?
Preseason is called a tryout. It is not the before season, actual season. It's a tryout. It's where guys are trying to make the team and impress upon the coach. That's all it is. So you're right. You're going to see different people play, especially it's not just for the guys that are trying to make that team, but you know, they're trying to make a team. Mm-hmm. So that's what all the coaches appreciate, is they want to give them time to get some tape out there so that they can maybe, you know, make it somewhere else. 'Cause it's not going to be on whatever team you're on. As far as fans in the stands, for preseason, I have season tickets to the Saints, and we can't even give preseason tickets away, and no one wants to go, you know, period. It's just, it's kind of meant for families or people that are not going to pay the regular dollars to go see a regular season game, or a big group that just wants to get people out there just to do something on a Friday or a Thursday night.
Yeah, right.
What you said, Matt, is a great example of this is a glorified scrimmage. It's a glorified scrimmage in a way for the owners to make extra money in their own local markets and to pretend to put on a show. It's a Broadway show without Broadway. And I think that's why people are a little bit disappointed in this whole thing, because as you said, Michelle, it is a lot of money to shell out for those tickets. And the Seahawks are one of the very few teams that also include the preseason games in the season package. So you cannot buy season tickets without buying tickets to the preseason games also.
The Saints also. The Saints are the same way. It's part of your deal. You get all of them. But, you know, when you go, the concession
Recording
stands
in
are the
progress.
Same. You know, they're not charging less for the hot dog and the Coke and the beer in the preseason, even though you're getting a lower quality. That's still regular season pricing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here we are. NFL will maybe in week three, we'll see a little more of the starters. Take it into stride, folks. I guess you could say, Josh, NFL season is upon us, but the NFL season hasn't truly started.
Certainly. And before I talk about NFL one second, I just wanted to bring up something in relation to the Paralympics. On AGT right now, there actually is a comedian, Josh Blue, who has cerebral palsy. He is hilarious.
He is awesome.
A former Olympiad. He was on the Olympic soccer team for the United States. But that guy's hilarious. Watch him at AGT. Vote for him. Support him. Shout out to Josh Blue there. Just wanted to get that in really quick. But yeah, I agree with what you guys are saying. It's not, I mean, to an extent, though, there is another side of it where you see other teams that they're putting their ones out there. I mean, look at when we played against the Broncos, and yeah, they're in a different place, but how much of a different place are they? They're looking for what their team is. They have not been good. So they want their ones out there to see what they are. But the Seahawks are in a position where they have a brand new offense. And I am excited that we're finally going to get to see the ones in this preseason game. When you have a brand new offense with a guy as a first time offensive coordinator, I know he's been around the game a lot. He's a pass game coordinator. He has his run game coordinator with him that he brought over. I want to see them get reps in a live game. 'Cause there's, you can practice against your teammates all you want, but there's something about playing against someone else who has an intent and a hunger to beat you, that has a reason to do this and a reason to break up what you're doing. You know, I mean, not to say that the defense isn't going to try to compete with the offense practice, but it's not the same. It's different when it's a different team. So I'm excited to see that come up in this preseason game.
Hey, Josh, I got a question.
I think
for
one of
you.
The big.
Go ahead, Brent. No, go ahead, Brent.
I was going to say, I think one of the big things that we saw last week, with especially like the Broncos and the Seahawks game, the Broncos had have a starting quarterback competition going on. So that's a specific reason why you play your ones, is you want to see how your quarterbacks do with your primary guys out there, and they aren't victimized by your fifth string guy that's going to be playing for the Jaguars eventually,
or me playing center.
Right. Yeah. Now I think you make a good point about, you know, we've got a new offense in Seattle. But at the same time, when you're playing against vanilla defenses, because no one's going to bring what they're really going to bring in the regular season, what you see in an exhibition game, which is a term that the NFL refuses to use, but it's what it is, what you see in an exhibition game isn't really going to give you anything that you're not going to see against your ones versus ones in practice. Now, you know, like down in New Orleans there, you had kind of a competition going on that really shouldn't have been a competition. Sounds like that's finally been resolved.
Thankfully.
That has been resolved.
Thankfully.
Brent, you're 100% correct. I think it varies per team. Like, what's going on per team? Is there, and with the Denver, same thing. Are you looking at a new quarterback, or is your offense or defense pretty much set? So now you're really just looking at second strings. And that's, I guess, the fun, and also depends who your team is and market is. It's either I'm done, or, hey, we got to watch this.
Guys, I got to ask, this is a serious question. Does the NFL really need preseason?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, 100%. If you throw everyone in the regular season, we saw some of what the effects are last year. You have more injuries. You have people not ready for play. So then your first few games become your exhibition games, so to speak.
You didn't really have training camp last year either. So I'm not sure if last year.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah,
you make a good point,
But at the same time, it's not. Yeah. It was even worse than what we're seeing now, as far as nobody having anyone around them for a week, and then you go out there and play.
Okay, but, Michelle.
And here's the thing: what we're seeing right now is we're seeing a lot of players saying that, like, they really want to have that person to person contact. They want to have that team chemistry of working with people, especially in a physical game. You know, like, maybe it's different in my job where I work in tech and I don't, you know, everything I can do can be virtual, but their game is physical. Their game is built on synergy. Being with people is important. And more importantly than that, this is something that's been kind of frustrating to me in a lot of ways with this, the NFL Players Association, is they're only really caring about the top, maybe what, 5% of the league, and saying that we don't want to have preseason games and we don't want to have in-person practices. You know, the other 95% of the league that's always fighting for a job, the new guys coming in, the people that are not superstars, they want to be out there to compete because they want to have those opportunities to impress the coaches. Like you said, that's what the preseason is for. You can't get rid of that because that gets rid of their opportunity to show I can do something. You know, think about the guys that are undrafted free agents, right, that are just kind of barely given a shot. They weren't really given a drafted grade. And how many of those have we had in Seattle that have turned out to be well? And think about the preseason games and how they've changed the future, the present of the Seattle franchise. Remember when Russell Wilson was a rookie and he beat out Matt Flynn, the guy they paid big money to for a starter position? I mean, the preseason is important, and I don't think that we should ever get rid of it, despite what the Players Association might be saying.
Well, then here's something else.
Then why are you okay with no preseason in college football?
College football is different. It's like, it's a different game. There's so many more like opportunities for guys to play there.
But it's not 100% different as the NFL. It's different, but it's not as different as you make it out to be, Josh. I would definitely say that it is not as different as you make it out to be.
Okay, and
because
like, they're not competing for this tiny amount of jobs. There's a ton of schools. Like, if you want to play football, you can find a place to play football in college. And if you do well in your first season, you can move to another school, or, you know, like, you can move around like that. But these are men competing for their jobs and their opportunity in a small amount of places to play. It's very different in that sense.
I think the other thing that's different is unless you're Clemson, Alabama, your season usually starts with 2-3 games that don't mean the same as your conference schedule.
But they all count.
They count, but they
for
don't
what?
Count the same.
It's not their job.
They count.
You know, they'll still get.
Not,
they'll still
not,
be seen.
If you're not Alabama, you're not going to win out, right? So these games are treated differently. Like when Washington plays, say, Idaho, it's not the same as when Washington plays USC.
So, we all know that's a paycheck for Idaho.
I believe
the comparison you're making is apples to oranges. And here's what I'll say about that. If the NFL needs their preseason so badly, how is it that the Canadian Football League can play 18 games and have only two preseason games?
No one cares about the Canadian Football League.
Bingo.
If no one cares about the Canadian Football League, Josh, then how come the Canadian Football League is where Warren Moon earned his NFL career?
And why is it that the Canadian Football League brings in so much more many viewers and so much more? Oh, wait, no, they don't. Never mind.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what.
That's the point. Like, the NFL is the cream of the crop. This is the top tier for football. There's no better football in the world than what you have in the NFL.
Oh, that's true. But to say that nobody cares about the Canadian Football League is insulting.
Comparatively speaking,
that is insulting of you to say that, because those guys are just as much professionals and get paid. They don't get paid as much, but they get paid, right? So that is insulting.
Essentially, a minor league
to somebody's career
to a professional, to like the professional NFL top cream of the crop, and like they can get away with two preseason games. They still have a preseason. That doesn't get rid of the fact that the preseason is important for these guys to have an opportunity. You know, I bet some of the Canadian Football League players that we've seen would not have the opportunity they do if we don't have a preseason in the NFL.
I think
that is their opportunity to play and show NFL teams that they can play against other NFL talent.
And you don't see a lot of people saying, hey, I'm highlighting what I'm doing in the NFL so I can go and play for the Canadian League. You know, as insulting as it may be, no, it's not on that level. And you could use that same argument with the XFL, whom I've really enjoyed playing. And yeah, they play just as hard, but it is not the same. It doesn't bring in the numbers. Not as many people care. You know, there you go. And, you know, you could watch Matt golf every weekend, which, you know, might be really fun. But in the vast majority of Americans, nobody cares. I'm sorry, Matt. I don't mean to insult you. But guys, there's another way that the NFL is picking up their game. They're proposing testing vaccinated players every 7 days. They want to test. You heard me right. Vaccinated players every 7 days amid the COVID-19 surge. Some want daily. The NFLPA wants daily testing. Now, I'm going to bring in some outside of sports things to consider. How are they going to test? You know, after December 31st, according to the CDC's site, they're going to withdraw requests for the Food and Drug Administration to use that PCR test because it has been inaccurate. It gives false positives and false negatives. It's if you have just a couple of molecules of the coronavirus, yet you're not sick, you haven't contracted it, it'll register as a positive. These are some of the numbers, by the way, we're all going off of. So there's that. Then there is the push to continue to vaccinate NFL players. The Vikings, for example, had a disease expert come to their team and to talk to them, to try to convince them, because the vaccination rates are one of the lowest in the NFL of the Minnesota Vikings. So this expert, an epidemiologist from the University of Minnesota, spoke to the players at the training facility, and he let them know that there's a rumor going on that there's 6,700 people that have died from taking the vaccine. He said that is absolutely not true. It's a rumor. The vaccine makes you sterile. Absolutely not true. Now, two things that I want to bring in is, one, no, you're right, it's not 6,700. According to VARS, the government's own site, there's been 15,000 reported. The VARS site has confirmed 6,700. And that's only one reporting system. Now, I know I'm getting off sports here, but I want to bring this all into consideration. Japan has had some serious problems with the vaccines because of sterilization, because of fertility issues. And you can listen to our Wednesday program where we had a fertility expert. So what I'm saying is, you know, when you go into Planned Parenthood and you say, you know, I'm pregnant, I'm kind of concerned, they give you information on abortion, how we can give you abortion, the good things about abortion, but you're not making a real choice because they're not saying, you know, here are some side effects, here are some emotional things that could go on, here are the big, huge risks. So is it really conformed consent if we're only giving part of the story? For the Minnesota Vikings, bringing it back to football,
this is interesting.
They were told, look, you should get this. All of these things, they're not really true. They're not giving a balanced information. Kirk Cousins has been public about saying, I'm not getting that darn thing. And yet, they need to test vaccinated people. All right, Rich, I want you to weigh in on this. You're itching.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing, especially about the Kirk Cousins angle of this whole thing.
Okay.
He has been vilified for not taking the vaccine, and Lamar Jackson has gotten COVID twice, and you hardly hear anything about he needs to do this. He needs to be more responsible for his teammates. And even Kirk Cousins' father, who is a pastor in Orlando, has been personally attacked for his position on Twitter and other social media sites.
I just want you to take into consideration that people like this epidemiologist is saying these things are absolute rumors. They're untrue. No, they are true and they should be talked about. That doesn't negate the fact that maybe a vaccine could help people, that maybe it could lessen your risk of getting one variant. But there are also Nobel Prize winning doctors who are saying, well, because of this vaccine, that's why we're seeing superbugs and variants coming along. If we don't talk about it, we don't know. And here's the other concerning thing. This epidemiologist said, look, we have to take care of each other. Getting vaccinated today is not just about protecting yourself. If you're an adult, it's about protecting your kids from getting the virus. It's the children. We have to do it from the children. But look, if it works, how are vaccinated people transmitting it? Why do we need to test them? I mean, I'm not an epidemiologist. So that's why I want to listen to everything. And not just someone who says they're an expert, but someone else who says they're an expert that says something else. Let's let the truth weigh out. Now I'm going to turn it over to you guys in just a minute, but maybe one of you could explain to me why the NFL is doing this, because I don't understand how I can give you a disease that I don't have when you've been vaccinated for it. I'm so confused.
That's a great question, Michelle. And the other question that we need to ask is, 100% of staff in the NFL, nearly 100% of people on staff in the NFL, other than players, have at least been somewhat vaccinated. And then 93%, I believe, in the latest article that we're talking about, players have been somewhat vaccinated. Yet we're having to do all these tests and we're having to put in all these more stringent rules. That to me says what we're doing now is not work. What we're doing now is not working. So if getting the vaccine helps you and reduces the risk of getting COVID-19, then we should be seeing the numbers go down, not go up. And we should have had a better plan to battle this variant. And the other thing that confuses me is Joe Biden, when he came into office, said there was no plan. He must have forgotten about Operation Warp Speed and all the other things that the previous administration has done. So you get a different message every different day of the week. And that's why I think people are completely just fed up with this. Matt?
Yeah, y'all nailed it on the head. As a guy who works in health and fitness, I'm not a medical expert. Disclaimer, disclaimer. But you're right. the CDC went from a standpoint of research and knowledge and years of researching things for heart disease and cancer and obesity and all these preventative measures to help you live a healthy, active lifestyle, to now what seems like every other week, it changes and the guidance changes and the guidance changes. And so then other people come out with, well, what about this all misinformation? The misinformation is coming from the government, from the standard bearer of what we need to be doing and need to be following consistently wavers on what they're trying to tell us. Then who are we to believe?
Well, and just another disclaimer, Brent, before you weigh in, everyone on our panel is at a different level of experience with COVID. I believe, Josh, you have not had it. I have had it. Some of us are vaccinated. Some of us are not. So we're coming from different angles here, and yet there's a consensus that there's a problem. Brent?
So, I mean, for me, it's all about consent here. If you are being told you must have a medical procedure, whether you consent to it or not, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. When you are told that you must have a medical procedure or you are excluded from society, mm-hmm. and you have no right to, if you are injured or killed by it, the manufacturers and the politicians are not responsible. You can't sue someone if you are permanently disabled by this.
Yeah.
I guess there are ways you can get insurance settlements, whatever. But so there's my like the core of the issue is like when you start forcing medical procedures on people, you're not the good guys. That's a hard line for me. Secondly, we talked about the VARS website where you have where that it catalogs reports of adverse reactions to the vaccine. That thing's a joke. I don't know if you've tried to work through it.
Yeah, it is.
But just trying to use it as a joke. But here's the thing. It is a self-reporting website. And that, as far as I can tell, is the only place, correct me if I'm wrong, please, but the only place where this data is being collected.
Correct.
So, okay. Let me correct you on that since we talked about this on Wednesday.
Please do.
It is one area that data is being collected. Insurance does have some data on adverse effects. Medicare, Medicaid may have data as well. These are things that my guest on Wednesday's Health Watch edition of My Michelle Live brought to light. She also brought to light a Harvard study in 2010, I believe, that said, hey, as far as VARS is concerned, they're not collecting all the other data that is out there. And so according to Harvard study, not my word, Harvard study, VARS is only getting 1% of the adverse effects. And just keeping
right. That was part of what I was after there is that yeah, 1% was even lower than what I had read several places. But even so, you have incomplete data. There's no methodology to that. It's like, oh, if I know about this website and I have some sort of reaction, I report it here, but that doesn't even mean that whatever's going on with me is connected to the virus. There's nothing about the VARS site that actually is scientific in how it's being collected or used. So if there are other databases of adverse reactions, that's good. It'd be nice if people actually knew about them.
Well, it
so
would, and because it's one You're, thing these, to be th- able to use VARS, levels. One thing to use VARS and say, yeah, it's a joke. So this epidemiologist to the Minnesota Vikings can say, yeah, you can't really trust that. That does not make it untrue that people are dying. It also doesn't make it untrue that people are having adverse effects. What we're finding now, you can find this very much on mainstream media, is that the mRNA doesn't stay localized in your arm. It's distributed out throughout the rest of your body. And yes, it is it's making its way to the reproductive organs, which means y'all men who have gotten vaccinated, you are going to be dealing with possible loss of testosterone in coming years. That means beer bellies and impotency and inability to make babies. For women, we have seen, and you can look at Japan, they have said, wow, there's a problem here with reproduction. So yeah, there are some issues. So as we watch it affect sports, what do you think could possibly be the effect of a vaccine that may have adverse effects on the future of our athletes? Anyone? Josh, you haven't weighed in.
Well, problems with their muscle development, problems with working out, all kinds of things.
Low testosterone, Matt, what does that do?
What I want to know too is, where are the antibody tests? Why are we testing for the disease?
I've got it. I had one.
Testing. We're not. I know, but why? So you have the NFL here. They want to do all these tests every week. Why not test for the antibodies? Which, I mean, the studies are coming out now that show that they're superior to the vaccine as far as protecting you from the disease. Why, if you have had the disease and the antibodies are more present in your body than the vaccine, why are we going through this whole clown show with weekly testing? It doesn't make sense to me. If you have the antibodies, it should be at least
that should be enough, so we could be and we wouldn't have to test every day like some in the NFL want. Garrick Ping is joining us. Garrick is on the road, so his internet may be spotty.
Speaking
but I'm glad
clown shows.
Love it. I'm glad you could join us. This is great. Come on, right?
I had COVID back in December, and I was tested for antibodies back in February, which I had, and I thought, what the heck, I'm going to test again here. About 2 weeks ago I got tested, and I was showed up positive still for antibodies.
Ta-da.
So, my doctor says I'm better protected than if I had the vaccine. So I totally jumped into the middle of the conversation. I don't know.
No, it was completely appropriate. I have a couple of questions. One, Matt, since we're now hearing studies, and this applies to sports and to mandatory injections, if the mRNA does affect your testicular region and testosterone, what effect does that have? You know, if you as a professional here in this profession, low testosterone, what effect does that have on men as far as athletics is concerned?
So quite coincidental that you're actually asking this question. I am no longer 29 years old. I am 46 years old. So what does that mean from a testosterone level? That means my testosterone naturally drops. I would conservatively say that I am, as far as health and fitness for people in my age, easily within the top 5% of fit people for my age group. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? My testosterone was almost on the bottom end of the acceptable range, completely out of my voluntary control. It just happens. I didn't know that till last month when I actually had a blood test and blood drawn for the first time to check all my levels. So if this truly does affect testosterone levels as we age, which naturally drop, so that big S that's on our chest when we're, you know, 32, 35, and then it kind of just starts to fade away, and it's not there anymore when we're in our 40s and beyond. Sure, it's going to accelerate muscle loss. It's going to accelerate fatigue. You're not going to feel like a man in the things that you do, whether it's in the gym or whether it's in the bedroom. So all of this natural decline that you're going to have, if it accelerates that, then yes, guess what? I'm now taking a testosterone shot once a week to get my levels back up. So what's that going to do to people that are not in my fitness level, that are just of the quote unquote average Joe, quote unquote dad bod? That can be fairly detrimental.
Wow, it's something to think about. Josh, I'd like for you to weigh in, please.
Yeah, well, I mean, we could go on at this ad nauseum, and it is the
and we almost the, have the subject, actually.
Yes,
real close.
It's a subject that is sweeping the nation, right? I mean, this is what everyone's debating about, and the problem is that we're not actually debating about it. The problem is that everyone wants to live in an echo chamber and shout down anyone else who believes differently than them, because that is where we've come to. That's just, well, if you don't get the vaccine, then you know you're believing in some cow parasitic or dewormer, well, a bunch of idiots. Well, you know, there's lots of research. Japan recently said that if you look at the comparison between African countries that have used ivermectin versus not, that you have much better results. Like, there's data out there to look at, but we're not looking at it. And for some reason, we have completely forgotten that big pharma is not your best friend. That big pharma doesn't actually care about your health. They care about
oh,
money.
Thank you, Josh. You just got us canceled. We're going to be watch the for the few more seconds that you can before they take us off the air. Great job. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Josh. Yeah.
Well, you know,
so you just lost your Pfizer sponsorship.
Right.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, I know.
From the mouth of the babe.
You know, and people say, like, well, now we have FDA certification. They're like, now you're gonna move the goalpost so you don't trust the FDA. And I'm over here like, you guys ever trusted the FDA?
Wait,
it's my libertarianness in me, but it's, did we forget that the FDA is 75% funded by big pharma, by pharmaceutical companies? That one of the presidents at Pfizer used to be one of the heads of the FDA? Like, it's an incestuous cesspool of politics and money. And it's silly, and I could go on it forever, but I'm just going to stop there because I won't stop if I don't.
I think Josh would be a really good commentator if he was a little bit more, I don't know, verbal about what he thinks. Garrick?
Tell us how you really feel. Yeah. Now, is it true that the Pfizer vaccine that got approval is not the one that most people are getting right now? Did anyone hear that?
I don't know.
Well,
do not know.
I can't answer that question.
I had heard that it was a different vaccine that's being approved, that has been approved because of the fact that the EUA, the emergency use authorization, still protects Pfizer, and so they gave approval to a different vaccine.
I don't know.
For those who are
watching or listening, that's something that maybe we could research if you know and you have real data, not speculation. Write us and we'll confirm it. And this is why we talk about things, because sometimes you just don't hear it in the news. You just aren't hearing it reported. So it's bringing a lot of division. It's bringing division for teams in a time where we need to come together. But one place we can say Kumbaya is the ACC, Big Ten, Pac-12 Alliance. That is now coming together. Rich?
Josh and I can tell you what's going on here, and I'll tell you exactly what's going on here. This is a move by the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 to see if they can form an alliance that makes things look better for them to go up against the SEC. They're tired of the SEC getting the limelight, and they want to have their piece of the pie. The Pac-12 was the leader on making this agreement because they want to increase the visibility of football. Football drives the college sports machine, and the brand new commissioner, who thank God is not Larry Scott anymore, is finally thinking with his brain. Josh?
Yeah, and one of the things – you guys know I've complained about it a lot, this TV scheduling and how we'll have games that like end at 2 a.m. Because, you know, Pac-12 at night. You know, why should we have our team actually watched by human beings?
Or the 8 a.m. starts they were talking about.
Right. And that was one of the big points of this. This is one of the big reasons they did this. And they said that is they want, you know, better TV scheduling. And it's exactly true, especially with SEC inviting Texas and Oklahoma to join them. You know, they're trying to create themselves their own super college football league. They want to be the be all end all of it. And this is a move to try to protect the rest of college sports from them becoming just the monopolistic juggernaut. And I'm here for it. I hope it works. I think the SEC is too powerful. I think college sports follows the SEC more than anyone else. And there's a huge bias there. I also think that this will help push the our schedules to be better because we'll have more better cross-conference games being planned out. And I think it'll also push college sports to a bigger playoff picture so we don't just have four teams that and that's it.
Well, I think too, Josh, the thing that we also got to think about, let's not leave college basketball out of the mix. This really helps the Pac-12 to play the ACC in college basketball and play the Big Ten in college basketball. So there you raise the level of another big time sport, and we don't have the respect to get X number of teams into the big dance in March. So I think that also comes in as a byproduct.
Well, you got to win some of those games though too. And so that's the other part for the Pac-12.
But see you
that's the other
but see Brent, you've got to get the exposure and opportunity to play those games. So now the Pac-12 has maneuvered themselves by taking this stance, we're going to be the leader on this. We're going to put ourselves in the forefront. That Washington Michigan game to begin the season is big for the Huskies.
Okay.
Very big. They play Montana the week before, but that Michigan game is what it's all about.
Yeah, I think
it affects recruiting as well.
Yep.
Yeah, it can. Again, I think the potential is there for this to be really good, but you also have to take advantage of this. I mean, for the last 5 years, the Pac-12 has had some of these intersectional matchups, especially in football, where they've gotten blown off the field, and they've proven they're not at the same level as the Big Ten or the SEC. So, yes, you can get these cross-conference scheduling and maybe expand some recruiting bases that way, but they're going to have to perform or it's not going to matter.
Okay.
Well, Bozo the Clown isn't driving about the clown car anymore, so we're in better shape.
We're talking a little bit about basketball. I wanted to move on over to the NBA.
This is a great story.
Which story? You tell it then. You tell it. Come on. Go on.
How do you know it's on her mind? Are you a mind reader? What if she had a whole thing that you didn't even know about?
The NBA Players Association is going to help develop Rucker Court in Harlem, Rucker Park, the legendary point of street basketball for all the NBA legends. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and everyone else you can think of got their start at Rucker Park, and they're going to work on the main court and update the backboards and all that good stuff. Michelle,
but that was one story, so we might as well start there. You know, you're amazing, Rich, really. We might as well start there because it is nice to hear a good news story. Then I'm going to bring it over here to LeBron James, who is getting dissed again. Chris Carter was asked if LeBron James would cut it in the NFL. Now, Chris Carter, he's played for the Eagles, Dolphins, Vikings.
Minnesota Vikings.
Kings is where he made his name.
But he had played for the Eagles and for the Dolphins as a wide receiver. And so, right, correct?
Yes.
Am I right on that? Okay.
Yes.
But he was asked on a talk show recently if he thought LeBron James would cut it in the NFL, right? He says, no, I'm sure he's great in the NBA, but he does not have NFL toughness. So this, guys, I wanted to bring this up because, geez, he's getting dissed. And this is like last week we were talking about him not getting any votes as the league's best player from executives and scouts. Dude is, you know, come on. He can't get any love. And Josh, you love LeBron James. So I want you to tell us what you really think here, because I know you're not good at that.
Because LeBron James is a freak of an athlete. If he wanted to come into the NFL and he wanted to play tight end, he would have dominated the league at tight end.
Okay.
I mean, just remember how much of a freak he was when he started playing. You know, physically, he was just better. I mean, he came right out of high school and he was playing at a top level. He is one of the guys that is just born with a different kind of talent. a different kind of physical ability.
Okay, and I agree with you, but with all these years in the NBA, does he have NFL toughness? Look,
could he play there now? No. How old is he? He's like past the most players aren't playing at his age in the NFL. So no, right now he could not. But
okay, maybe if he was trained in the NFL, he made his career.
I think when he was 20, he could have dropped right in. And I mean, who knows how many hits he would have taken, how his route running would have been as a tight end or whatever. But I after watching the Tim Tebow show, and I love Tim Tebow as a guy, but watching that clown show in Jacksonville, I think that
who did he get picked up by, Rich?
If you put LeBron James, to my knowledge, he hasn't been picked up yet.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
If you put LeBron James in an NFL training camp at age 28, I think he would have done significantly better just on his raw athleticism.
Okay. I'm sorry I interrupted there. Tim Tebow did not get picked up by an NFL team, but he did get picked up by a company who is going to have them be his spokesperson. That's the news story that I saw. So, you know, people land on their feet. Nonetheless, poor LeBron James. I just thought that was interesting. But I wanted to lead that in to the WNBA. The Seattle Storm was honored for their championship at the White House, and they were praised for being a force of change. And some of this change is very left-leaning, the right way to think kind of change. And in that vein, I wanted to play something because they have been a champion of equal rights, LGBTQ, XYZ. Sometimes you've got to put some of that into perspective. So I wanted to play comedian Chappelle. What's his first name?
Dave Chappelle.
And this is what speaking of LeBron James, this is something that he had to say. Yes, the expletives have been edited out. Take a listen.
Okay, say LeBron James changed his gender. You know what I mean? Okay, can he stay in the NBA? Or, because he's a woman, does he have to go to the WNBA where he will score 840 points a game?
We actually talked about this a little bit, Michelle.
What does it actually mean to be equal? You know what I mean? Like, if women are actually equal to men, then there would be no WNBA, would there? You would just be good enough to play in the NBA with us.
Ouch.
Or, here's another idea that's going to be very controversial.
Oh, well, no
you could no, it's shut the fuck up.
Oh! That didn't get edited as much as I thought. All right, sorry about that.
Changed his gender.
Okay, beep. Retroactive beep.
You can hear
worse language than that if you go to a Sounders Portland match, which you will this weekend. So anyway,
that's how I talk to my clients, by the way. That's it. That's what
I know. So at any rate, as the Storm is championing change, what does that change really mean? Sometimes we don't think through our world views to the logical conclusion. Anybody want to weigh in? She's opening the floodgates. Bring it.
I could say this, considering the timing and what is currently happening to women in Afghanistan, the whole thing was nauseating to me. I mean, I you can get really political about the whole visiting the White House, which president, all that kind of stuff. I have no problem with them visiting the president and the White House after winning the NBA championship, but why in the world you would go while this situation in Afghanistan is going on, and specifically what is happening to women there, and the silence from certain parts of our political spectrum on that just is unbelievable to me. So it nauseated me. It really did.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a celebration of the Storm's championship, not a political rally for someone's own personal moral superiority and moral brownie points. That's what it was.
Yeah. Anyone else? I mean, what more can you say there? I think you guys said it all. I mean, you guys said it all. That's, it's very disturbing. But as we are talking women, and I, you know, I love talking women in sports, right? As we do that, I did want to bring up hockey. Now, this is good news.
Yeah,
this was really great. The U.S. shut out Russia, setting and Hillary Knight set a women's world hockey scoring record. Hillary Knight tied a goal record previously as they beat Finland 3-0. I mean, it was just like boom, 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 boom. Way to go, USA. That's a good news story right there.
Definitely, definitely. Even though last Thursday night, 24 hours ago, they lost 5-1 to Canada, they're still going to be in the medal round, and it'll still be, I think, Canada and the U.S. for the gold medal at the World Championships.
That's
These are obviously
good.
The two best teams. And Hillary Knight, the face of the sport.
I like it. I like it. All right. I want to go on to the glorious season that we're in for soccer. EPL is in full swing. So we've got soccer going on all the time, bringing it a little closer to home. I don't know if any of y'all watched the MLS All-Star Game versus Liga MX. That's the Mexican League. Now, while Liga did win the skills challenge, which was really fun to watch, only by 1 point. Come on. The MLS team won over Liga MX in the shootout. That was incredible. It was like watching Team Sounders and Team LA, though. I mean, there were six Sounders that started in the starting
11.
Six Sounders and everybody else. Oh my gosh. That was really amazing. And as far as, this is kind of a cool family angle that I wanted to bring up in that game. Christian Roldan of the Seattle Sounders was team captain. Congratulations. His brother played and started. So it was the first time two brothers played on the All-Star game as starters together with the Roldan family, mom and dad watching on the sidelines. But I learned something else that game. I don't know if you guys knew this, but there is a third Roldan who is in the MLS. Rich, do you know who that is?
I must confess.
I stumped the encyclopedia. She shoots. She scores. Yes, yes, yes. Woo, woo. Yeah. All right.
But the MLS, like the CFL, is a minor league, so nobody cares about it.
Well, in America, we do. So just like in Canada, they may care there. Although I think they watch more. Statistically, they do watch more NFL. So there you go there, too. And you're right. In a lot of regards, no one has cared about MLS, Rich. And that's why this All-Star game.
You must read the Seattle Times, Rich.
Oh, boom. And that's why this MLS game.
Sports Radio.
That's why this MLS All-Stars game is so important, to watch the MLS grow up, because it is becoming more and more relevant. It is important for us to call things as they are. If no one cares, let's call it out. But let's watch them come of age and start to dominate so people will care. In this MLS All-Star game, by the way, let me just give you the answer to that stumping question. It's Cesar Roldan Jr., and he's actually an athletic trainer for the LA Galaxy. But that was quite a game to watch. There's a rival game by, and I don't know, with Christian Roldan being called up to the international team, as well as Raul Ruiz Diaz being called out to their national teams respectively. There is a big MLS match this weekend between the biggest rival in American soccer, and that's Portland and Seattle, after Seattle dominated 6-2 in their last matchup just a couple of weeks ago. Garrick, can you weigh in on EPL, All-Stars, MLS, wherever you'd like to go, just bring it.
Well, there is so much happening in the world of soccer. First, just on the last story we just talked about, the MLS and Liga really did a great job promoting. And I must confess, this is the first MLS All-Star game that I've actually watched the entire game. Huh. And I think it was super smart to actually make this a game that there was something to play for. It wasn't just an exhibition match against, one of the European teams that was just kind of getting a warm up in advance of their season. But it was truly a game where there was pride on the line. I mean, this was the best of our MLS, and it was the best of the Mexican League. Yeah. And so there was a lot of and there's hostility between the countries because of what's happened on the international stage. And so this was exciting and it was fun. And adding the skills competition, that was awesome.
That was really cool. There was a lot of trash talk going on there. And I don't even speak Spanish, but you heard a lot of it. It was something else. What a really fun match to watch.
I so enjoyed seeing Raul Ruiz Diaz. And it was as if he had the biggest grin on his face the whole time. I mean, making shots, missing shots, he was just smiling, he was just loving it. And I mean, to me, like with MLB All-Star game, I love the skills, the home run derby, I always record that. That's one of the highlights for me. And so I was excited to see MLS do this, and so it just made it a lot more exciting and interesting and engaging. And I think you're right, it is kind of a coming of age thing,
Eric. It was a real it was a real all-star game, and it was the first time that MLS had won a shootout since 2015. So that's a big thing.
Oh, wow.
And I think you can say, indeed, coming of age. Something else that happened during that game, once again, they had to stop the game, what was it, 10 minutes in, because the Mexican fans were yelling such horrible obscenities. What bothers me, though, is that which obscenities, we talked about this briefly last week, so we don't have to do our ad nauseum thing again, but which obscenities are okay and which aren't? I mean, because it'll offend this group of people, but this group of people is okay to offend. They stopped the match, gathered everyone in center court until the Mexican fans settled down and learned to act like adults. I don't know. So there you go. We're running out of time. I know Josh likes to weigh in on Major League Baseball. There's also some other Major League Baseball news that maybe others in our roundtable might want to take on. I know, Rich, you sent us one on Brandon Belt dedicated to Homer game to his late grandmother, which is a sweet, sweet story. I love that. Anyone else want to weigh in on a Major League Baseball? And then we'll get to Josh.
Well, let me tell you about the Brandon Belt story real quick.
Yeah.
He was not planning to play in that game. He was having a real hard time adjusting to the situation, but he knew how much his grandma had meant to him and how much she'd helped him go around to elite baseball showcases, and his father reminded him of that, and then he decided to play.
I love that.
He didn't say, I'm having a tough time, but I can't work through this. He decided.
It's just too much on my mental inability, and I just need to step away from the game, and I certainly don't want to talk to reporters about it because it's just too much stress. So we didn't hear that.
It was a great
Michelle, you're so insensitive. I know. I see those comments coming in. Go ahead. It's okay, Josh.
Yeah, well, if we're going to talk about baseball, I am just so excited for what the Mariners are doing right now.
He's so cute. And you know what? I am wearing a Mariners hat. I know we have listeners all over the world now. But you know why it's fun to follow the Mariners? Because, again, if I haven't pointed this out before, of all of Major League Sports, they have had the longest dry run of getting into the playoffs. And yet, are we seeing something magical happen, Josh?
We are, and the Mariners right now ahead of schedule, a team that lost starting pitcher after starting pitcher to start the year, who had, you know, a lot of prospects, young guys. They're in a position right now where they're two games back of a wild card spot, right in the thick of it. And, you know, it's funny because they're still getting slept on by a lot of media. For instance, one power ranking had the Mariners ranked at 12th right after they swept the people that they put at number 10 in their two game series. They put the Athletics two spots ahead of them in those power rankings, which I found really interesting after that convincing two game sweep there and the Mariners passing them up in the wild card standings. I am really excited because this could be the time. And if you guys want me to follow another MLB team, you guys want more, you know, let us know and I will pay attention to them. But right now I'm a big Mariners fan.
You may get a visit from the Moose, Josh, if you decide not to follow the Mariners.
I like it.
Oh, hey, I'm never going to not follow the Mariners, but I might add another team to my repertoire.
Just to give us a little really insight.
Well, yeah, you know, Josh, the big story is off the Mariners, what you were saying about the Mariners, is that Scott Service deserves recognition for possible manager of the year.
Absolutely.
With Scott everything Service, that he's done.
It is a crime that him and Jerry DePoto have not been re-signed yet. I'll say that much. They absolutely should be here in the future. The job that they have done, you know, they're competing for a wild card spot with teams that have more than double the payroll of what these Mariners are making right now. We got a lot of young talent. We got a lot of guys that are, you know, flyers from other organizations. And, you know, Scott Service absolutely. And, you know, a hodgepodge of players and put guys in the best position. You know, like Kendall Graveman, he's been better for the Mariners than he has been for the Astros. Why? Because honestly, I believe Scott Service is a better manager. He knows how to put people in the right position for them. And he cares about this team. I mean, gosh, the other day he cried after an emotional game where they beat the Rangers in the 11th inning. He said, like, this team is special and I love them. And the other greatest thing he said is people bring up the run differential, right? Which some people see as the be-all end-all of, like, well, they can't sustain this winning because they have a bad run differential. I would explain that by saying that the Mariners, when they lose, they've lost by a lot because they have a bad starting pitching performance because they've struggled with injuries at the starting pitching position this year. And then when they win in close games. But what Scott Service said to some critics about the run differential, he said, well, we may not have the best run differential, but we have the best fun differential. And that is the most important stat in baseball.
I will tell you, we have a fun differential here with Sports Timeout, to be sure. As we wind up our program today, it's time for our final shot.
Final shot.
Brent Baker, final shot.
Well, we talked about him a little earlier, but I can't think of anything that can top the refugee team at the Paralympics. There's just a level of inspiration for them that just takes it, you know, all these things we've talked about in a positive way, just to a different level, because those half dozen men and women have overcome physical, mental, emotional, spiritual devastation in their lives and are performing at the highest level. So I just tip of the cap to them. They deserve everything, every recognition they get for that, if they can get some.
Agreed. Garrick Pang.
So earlier I had cut out when you were talking about the WNBA Seattle team visiting. See, I don't even use their name. Visiting the White House. And how I think they could have had the opportunity to right there just say, you know, we're not coming to the White House right now because of what's going on for women in Afghanistan. I'm not giving my final shot to them, but I am giving it to the men and women in uniform who are our armed services who have fought so courageously there over the past 20 years, and to see so much of that just for them to feel like so much has been wasted. It hasn't been wasted, but I'm wearing my Central Command gear here just in homage to them and to show my appreciation and respect. And so I just want to give my final shot to all of our men and women who serve in our armed forces and put their lives on the line so that not just we in our country can can have the freedoms that we enjoy, but also people around the world. So thank you very much.
Amen. Amen. Rich Hallstrom.
And with freedom comes opportunity. I'm going to go back to the Paralympics for a great story. Nick Mayhew, a former Division I soccer player at Radford, has cerebral palsy. Well, in just 18 months, he becomes the T37, track 37, 100-meter champion at the Paralympics in world record time, 10.95 seconds.
All right. Matt Peel.
I'm going to give it out to the various new owners that are coming into NASCAR on both levels. NASCAR is typically the Southern white gentleman sport, you know, from the ownership to the drivers. And now we have a lot of different owners coming into both top levels of organization, which means they're going to hire different people. They're going to bring in different drivers. And, you know, it's still a results-based system like in other sports, but the fact that we have a lot of different people coming in, I think it just only makes the sport better.
I like that. Joshua.
Excellent.
So my final shot is going to be for a pitcher to watch out for in the Mariners minor league system. I know next year's going to be exciting because we have a lot of young guys that might be coming up that are currently in AA Arkansas after moving on from single A Everett. One guy that is a dark horse that is going to be an absolute steal for DePoto, traded a guy that they got off waivers for, is Matt Brash. He, along with Emerson Hancock, George Kirby, moved up from single A to double A this year. And this guy has gotten better at a higher level of competition. He is, the other day he was in a game and in four innings, he had 9 strikeouts. He's absolutely devastating people. This year, between the two teams, he has a 2.24 ERA. And let me see if I can get that exactly what it is with the Arkansas. Yeah. So with Everett, it was a 2.55 ERA. Since he moved to double A, it's 1.89. This guy is electric. He's getting up there. He's almost at 100 miles an hour on his fastball. He has plus command. I'm excited to see what Matt Brash brings to the table. And I'm excited for what this Mariners pitching rotation is going to look like. There's some serious competition we're going to be seeing in spring training next year. And that's the thing, again, to be excited about with this team. They're competing for a wild card spot this year. This is not the end goal for them. There is more to come. So be on the watch out for that with the Seattle Mariners and look out for Matt Brash and look for him in spring training this year.
And that's our final shot. My final shot goes to you who are listening, watching, or viewing. Thank you for making all of our podcasts from My Michelle Live, whether it's news and views, talking about Afghanistan this week, Health Watch, as we were talking about the information you're not getting with the vaccine, science and technology, entertainment, whatever it may be, in each and one of these podcasts, we look for a deeper story. And that deeper story leads to a message of hope, a message of making a difference, and to a loving God. Thank you for being part of the broadcast. Thank you to my buddies out there that are part of our Sports Timeout broadcast. We will catch you next time. Thanks, guys. Where's your dance moves?
For more fun, go to MyMichelleLive.com.